into holiday. Esther chapter 9, verse 22. You see, they knew they were going to die. They knew it was coming. Until Almighty God sovereignly intervened. And now they chose the very days when they would have been annihilated and exterminated, and they turned those days from sadness and mourning to rejoicing and celebration to acknowledge the change of events. Ask many people what the book of Esther represents, and they will tell you it's a book of tragedy. They will tell you it's the early Holocaust. But you and I know better. In fact, there's no Holocaust in Esther. There's a threat of Holocaust, but it never happens. Do you know this is the only book the Jews can turn to find roots for their holidays of Purim? Do you know that to this day, when they read from the scrolls of Esther, that little children come dressed in costumes, and adults dress up as well? The atmosphere is like an old-time melodrama. Everyone cheers the hero and the heroine, Mordecai and Esther, and they boo and hiss and stomp their feet when the name of Haman is mentioned. It's not a reenactment of a tragedy. It's a celebration of triumph. And that's exactly as God planned it. So these days were to be remembered and celebrated throughout every generation, every family, every province, and every city. And these days of Purim were not to fail from among the Jews or their memory fade from their descendants. Esther chapter 9, verse 28. If this official celebration of Purim had not been established, what happened during Esther's lifetime would have been forgotten within two or three generations. If you doubt this, think of what it is like talking to today's generation about World War I or World War II or the Korean War. I've done it, I know. They have this blank stare. They have absolutely no memory of these years in our history, and so they listen with casual interest. But most of them lack any sense of its significance. That's why it is important to celebrate events like Memorial Day, Independence Day, Armistice Day, and Thanksgiving Day. Our children and grandchildren have no memory of them, but it's important that they remember them nevertheless. We who have visited Holocaust memorials know how moving such sites can be. Those trees planted alongside the building in Jerusalem housing the horrible memories, each tree representing courageous men and women who aided the Jews, what tearful but gallant reminders. Yet how essential we remember, lest we forget and perish the thought, live to see such horrors repeated. Visiting sites like Gettysburg and Pearl Harbor and Dachau is invaluable to all of us. Within another generation, Vietnam will just be another place on the map in Southeast Asia. There will be no memory in the minds of the young. There will be no sense of anguish, no understanding of what it did to our nation, no sadness over the men and women who sacrificially fought and many who died there. But we can keep remembrance alive by celebrating with quiet honor the events of that time. This is one of the reasons Cynthia and I appreciate returning at least annually to our capital, Washington, D.C. Our nation's life is measured out, and we live there in memorials and monuments, celebrating the great moments and events of our history, tragic and triumph. The Washington Monument, the Lincoln Memorial, the Jefferson Memorial, the Vietnam Memorial, the Iwo Jima Monument in honor of World War II, those white crosses standing like silent sentries in Arlington Cemetery, the tune of the unknown soldier, the list goes on and on. Memorials are places provided for us to stand and be quiet, to read and especially to reflect, and to pass on to the next generation the roots of a nation's heritage. They give the present significance because they give the past perspective. One of my main fears for our present rapid-paced life and lifestyle is that we have so few memorials, so few monuments, even mental monuments. Life is lived in the fast lane. Superficial decisions, hurry-up childhoods, quick money, overnight successes, fast action, strong competition, so little time spent stopping and recording segments of our lives in a journal. So little emphasis on listening and learning and honoring. A divorce breaks and wounds a family deeply, and life rushes on. A young woman gets an abortion, and life speeds on. A business fails, and life goes on. There's a political scandal, and life speeds on. A death or a heartache comes, and before long, it's swept up in the whirlwind of activity, and life goes right on as a nation shrugs rather than grieves. A death or heartache comes, and before long, it's swept up in the whirlwind of activity, and grass grows over a grave as life goes on. And we're left with the anguish of a blurred memory, but no lasting perspective, no enduring wisdom. In order to have perspective, we must have